Hello there, my name is Pavel Brodowski, and you're listening to Rebel Spirits, a podcast about legendary jazz musicians from behind the Iron Curtain, who sought freedom in the art of improvisation. Today we're meeting Jan Ptaszyn-Wróblewski. He witnessed the birth and co-created the movement that became known as Polish jazz. As a sax player and composer, Ptaszyn worked with the best and most distinguished. Later, he went on to become a band leader himself. On top of that, he is the voice that introduced the amazing jazz music from Poland and the world to many generations of Polish listeners. So let's get to it. Jan Ptaszyn-Wróblewski, coming up on Rebel Spirits. When Ptaszyn was beginning his career, jazz was outlawed in Poland. The Second World War had just ended, but his homeland continued to be deprived of autonomy. As a result of the Yalta Conference, the country was virtually incorporated into the Soviet Union and fell behind the Iron Curtain. At that time, no one was sure what this would mean for Polish musicians, let alone for Polish society.
Te pierwsze trzy lata to były takie przygotowawcze dopiero pod ten stalinowski okres, kiedy już nic nie było wolno.
It went like this. The first 3 years, let's say, were just a warm-up before Stalinism really got going and everything got banned. But before that happened, we even had some independent record labels. Musa, Melodie, for example. But then the screw was tightened and there came a moment when we realized that we couldn't buy records anymore. There was only one record label, a state corporation, and this state corporation wouldn't issue jazz or anything remotely jazz-related.
Stalinism meant not only the end of civic freedoms, independent media, and provocative literature. The censorship apparatus also reached instrumental music, even though it was not explicitly political. Jazz became a hallmark of hateful Western imperialism. The ban on jazz meant all music had to be put under control.
Weird things started to happen at the radio. Quite suddenly, strange new people, a peculiar new playlist. And to top it off, the so-called realist agenda started being enforced and music hit rock bottom. You couldn't listen to it for very long.
At the same time, a counter-movement emerged to drive a wedge between Polish musicians.
You could say that later, when jazz came out in the open and newer trends took root, that the entire older generation of musicians was rejected, very unjustly. But they had a different outlook, this new generation, when they finally came into their own. They wanted a revolution and were stubborn. The elder musicians, they towered over us in technique, skill, practically everything except perhaps a sense of jazz.
But before this revolution broke out on the musical scene, the youth of Poland had already fallen in love with jazz, even if this was still a forbidden love. Some tried to smuggle records from Western countries. Many had gathered in private apartments to listen to rare and hard-won copies. Why did jazz become so popular in Poland? Ptaszyn has a simple explanation.
Dlatego, że to była muzyka zabroniona.
Precisely because it was forbidden music. Forbid Poles anything and they will have found a passion to keep them going from morning till night. That's how it went. Every one of us had to listen to it for years. There were no records. That's the most important thing we often forget, that until the year 1990, there were no Western records in Poland. None. Zilch.
Żadne. Zero.
If you wanted a record, you had to travel west and bring it home yourself. So Conover supplied us with everything we needed.
Willis Conover speaking. This is the Voice of America Jazz Hour. The music of jazz parallels the freedom that we have in America. Something that not every country has.
The authorities always tried to block Willis Conover's radio show, The Voice of America Jazz Hour, but it still reached a considerable audience in Poland. It was a school of music, but also of English. Conover spoke slowly with his gentle and deep baritone.
D.C. with The Voice of America Jazz Hour.
He was making sure his words were clear, whatever country they reached, especially in the Eastern Bloc, where his broadcasts attracted over 30 million regular listeners.
Przede wszystkim ważne było, że tę audycję mimo wszystko u nas można było usłyszeć.
Everyone who was interested in jazz listened to Conover. He had enormous authority. His radio program was being jammed. Hell knows how, but the signal couldn't be blocked completely. And you could rest easy that every day, at the same time and at the same frequency, you'd get an hour of jazz. And before that, an hour of popular music. As for that, some people took to it, others didn't, as you please. But the jazz hour afterward, that was top class. All the latest hits, as well as classic recordings. Willis served up the whole gamut, the entire spectrum, whatever that may have been. He didn't comment much, he just presented the music. Perhaps that was for the best. That way we could make up our own minds. That was what we did, every day. If only you had the time, you sat by a receiver and listened. Over time, this amounted to a vast volume of music. We listened to it for a good few years.
And then Khrushchev's thaw came to the entire block. Records were still banned, but now bands could play. It was official. The so-called catacomb period had come to an end, and Conover's followers entered the scene with instruments in their hands.
Let's remember that everything looked very different to us at that time. None of us had hope that anything would ever change in geopolitics. After all, the carve-up was approved by both the East and the West. We couldn't imagine that we would ever be allowed to play jazz in Poland, to say nothing of any other political changes. All the same, the power of jazz is such that when you're on stage, nobody can tell you what to play. You're there, all by yourself, completely free. Whether it's politically free or musically free, it doesn't matter to me. The musical freedom was the one that mattered. I had no political ideas at the time.
At this point, we have to highlight the role of Leopold Tyrmand, a Polish writer and jazz promoter. He organized concerts and hosted the first jazz broadcasts on Polish radio. These were still overseen by the regime, but now there was a little more room for artistic freedom.
Jazz didn't begin to spread for good until proper events started happening. This was first and foremost Tyrmand's doing. He organized several magnificent concerts in Warsaw. They had a huge impact. Others followed, and eventually mass events started appearing. The so-called jazz tournaments, in which, let's say, Melomani competed with Vichare's band, and the audience chose the winner by applause. Venues were vast, and the crush was immense. I suspect that many came out of snobbery, that forbidden fruit again. No longer forbidden, but it retained that attractive aura.
Memory of Bach.
During this period of relative freedom, an important spot appeared on Poland's jazz map, the Sopot Jazz Festival. This was where the standard of excellence in music was defined. The festival featured the best Polish jazz musicians and many international guests. Sopot was also the place where Ptashin met people who influenced Bolski's future career and the history of Polish jazz.
The festival is now legendary. I'm not so sure why, because mass events had taken place before, but Sopot set a clear boundary between jazz and popular music. Who was there? Well, melomani for sure. Good God, Kurilevich. Certainly Kurilevich was there.
Ptashin would soon collaborate with Andrzej Kurilevich. This composer and multi-instrumentalist was rightly called one of pioneers of jazz in Poland. But before that, Ptashin would be one of the founding members of another remarkable jazz band.
And Komina's Sextet, newly formed, was there too. It was the first band which didn't offer traditional jazz. Komida said trad didn't interest him. He'd only play modern, and because of this, I remember Tirmand, I think it was, announced to the audience that the next act would be for the connoisseurs. So, obviously, that guaranteed the success of their performance. Who wouldn't want to be a connoisseur? There were crowds there, still coming. Not so much to see the names, stars, but because it was a jazz festival. It was incredible, even for those times of the thaw. Crowds would come from all over Poland, hitchhiking, God knows how they all came. And when they came, the crowd couldn't fit into any of the halls. So all sorts of things were happening, including the now legendary parade. Everyone came up with what they could, and some bought in huge trucks for the bands to perform on during the parade. And Komida's Sextet travelled with this notorious coffin, on which were written the names of all the hits which weren't jazz, but aspired to be jazz.
The coffin was a vibraphone case plastered with obituaries that had titles of popular hits. For this was a funeral for popular music.
So this parade attracted not just musicians, but also other interested parties, like the infamous Bim-Bom Amdram troupe. Four people carrying four large letters and occasionally changing places, rearranging the letters into different words. Sometimes the letters formed the word dupa, which means ass, pardon my French, and this caused a national scandal. Literally all over Poland. All the jazz haters, and there were no lack of them, raised the alarm. What hooligans! What outrage! Because of this, the authorities would no longer allow jazz events to be called a festival. So to get around this, Tirmand coined the phrase jazz jamboree when he created a new student event in Warsaw. And jazz jamboree it remained.
Jazz in Poland was thriving in this period. Everyone knew and cherished the famous American players, but no one thought it possible to visit the capital of jazz, let alone play with the best. Once again, however, Ptashin's story takes an unexpected turn. The beginning of 1958 was a breakthrough moment. George Wein, the famous American impresario and the founder of the Newport Jazz Festival, traveled across Europe in search of young talents to join Newport's International Jazz Orchestra. That spring, he arrived in Poland.
It was unthinkable in those times. I've no idea by what miracle it happened. It was a regular audition, perfectly legal. George Wein, Marshall Brown, not just in Poland, but also in Czechoslovakia. They travelled where they could.
In Poland, they auditioned around 30 musicians, but they chose only one, Ptashin Wróblewski.
The actual journey was a challenge of its own. Getting the passport, say. But the real problem was that I was the only member of the orchestra who needed a separate visa for each Western country we visited. I had problems with moving around from day one. We had a meeting in Brussels, and I had no legal right to leave the plane.
But after many setbacks and obstacles, Wróblewski eventually found himself in the USA.
Let's be clear. Up until then, you only heard about American stars every now and then. Getting hold of someone's photo was a cause for celebration, and there simply weren't any records at all. So, here we land in New York. And there at the airport, Jerry Mulligan greets us with his quartet, and Benny Goodman is there to boot. I was dumbfounded. I couldn't believe it was all real.
There he was, this young fellow from behind the Iron Curtain, who barely had access to American records. Before, he could never have even dreamed of flying to the US. At that time, such cases were extremely rare. They concerned distinguished scientists, sports people, or dissidents who often never came back. But a 22-year-old sax player? That was unheard of. And yet, there he was, a member of an international jazz big band. They even played with Louis Armstrong one night.
A my byliśmy International Newport Band. Taka była oficjalna nazwa.
We were the International Newport Band, and that was our official name. We weren't anything to write home about because Europe was too far behind the Americans and the big band skills of most band members were wanting. But the colossal success of this endeavor worked in the opposite direction. The visitors learned a lot from American musicians and took it home and had an enormous impact in Europe. So, not so much what we presented in the States, but rather what we brought back from the States.
The most prominent figures in the jazz world became fully present before Ptashin's eyes. He listened, he watched, and he absorbed.
To był szok absolutny, oczywiście New York.
It was a shock, a total shock. Obviously, New York City. I remember reaching out for a newspaper to see where I could listen to something and discovered that on that day alone, there were some 300 jazz gigs in New York City. Whosoever we wanted.
Kogo byśmy nie chcieli.
We tried to listen to something every evening, and a large part of these evenings was taken up by Miles Davis, who played in Harlem with his phenomenal sextet.
After a few weeks of intensive rehearsals and performances with the International Newport Youth Band, when he immersed himself in the life of the capital of jazz, Ptashin had to come back to communist Poland. Back home, he funneled the American spirit into the local jazz scene. He started to play with people who'd go on to become some of the most important Polish musicians.
With the great trinity, Czaskowski, Komeda, Kurilewicz.
All of them met in 1958 when Ptashin joined the band Jazz Believers. A few years later, Ptashin would play a significant role in launching a whole new series of jazz albums titled, quite tellingly, Polish Jazz.
Gosh, the Polish Jazz Record Series has a strange history, and I'm afraid I have to take some responsibility for it. It began with me and Komeda travelling to Sweden and Denmark, where we recorded for Metronome Records. They later sent us the album, so we had this beautiful specimen with an album cover. Our jazz records were normally released without proper album covers, in makeshift sleeves. There was no way you'd have an album with a cover that said Andrzej Kurilewicz. It just said jazz.
Jazz. Po prostu jazz.
But inside, you got Andrzej Kurilewicz. So I ran to Polskie Nagranie with our Swedish album in hand and showed it to them and said, look, foreigners can record us and publish us and even make money. And here, we're smothered into nothingness. Also, I don't know whether there had ever been an LP by a single musician. I don't think so. It was all compilations. So I got the right to record the first LP which would come out with its own album cover.
The Polish Jazz Series, produced by the state-owned Polskie Nagranie Record Company, initiated in 1965 and continued to this day, was a true breakthrough for the Polish musical scene. These were the first jazz albums officially released in Poland. They had a distinctive cover, band name, liner notes, and list of musicians. They were recorded entirely by one band, which had at least a partial influence on the recorded repertoire.
I played with Kurilewicz at the time, so we spoke, and that's how the album Go Right came to be. After Go Right, which sold well, Polskie Nagranie decided why not do a whole series. And indeed, the subsequent albums bore the mark of the Polish Jazz Series, and major jazz record production had begun in Poland for the first time.
This change in publishing practices was a huge step forward. But Polish Jazz is more than just the name of this magnificent series. A whole artistic movement is said to have been conceived under this slogan.
Polish jazz był rozróżniany, choćby w Europie.
Polish jazz acquired a distinct identity in Europe. We didn't necessarily see it, but they did. And somehow, Stanko was seen as the classical example of Polish jazz. The same happened with Namysłowski. But then Namysłowski drew on Polish folk in spades, quite consciously. Also, definitely, Komeda also belonged to this style, which became known as Polish jazz. So, something like that definitely exists, but that's normal. Everyone has something inside that comes up through generations. Traditions, God knows what. And when you play jazz, you play yourself, so something has to come to the surface.
And to top it all, there was also the Polish Jazz Quartet, where Ptaszyn himself was the leader. One may easily get confused. The Polish Jazz Quartet, with Ptaszyn on tenor sax, Wojciech Karolak on piano, Andrzej Dąbrowski on drums, and different bass players, including Roman DeLong, was active until 1966. They created their own pieces, but mostly played American compositions known from Conover's broadcast.
Don't Get Around Much Anymore.
Ellington's Don't Get Around Much Anymore, Coltrane's Greensleeves, definitely, and also probably My Favorite Things, and Coltrane and Davis's Walking.
This could not have been further from the approach of Krzysztof Komeda, who also played with Ptaszyn in the 1960s. Komeda searched for a way to surpass standards, to mix jazz with more local music traditions.
The drive to search constantly. That's what Komeda rammed into our heads, very methodically. Not to play historic jazz, jazz from records we knew, but our own jazz, to play our own way. He applied this not just to improvisation, but also to arrangement, which is extremely clear to see. Komeda couldn't just take a swing tune and play it like Benny Goodman. He had to come up with a way to do it differently.
In a similar spirit, Ptaszyn launched one of the largest initiatives on the Polish scene. The Polish Radio Jazz Studio Orchestra was formed in 1969. Ptaszyn created a kind of all-star big band. This orchestra produced a myriad of recordings and toured across Poland and Europe.
I can't offer a clear-cut definition of the music we played as the Jazz Studio Orchestra. All experiments were welcome, so it could be Stanko's free jazz, Nahorny's piano bar ballads, Namysłowski's typical tangles. Any composer and arranger in Poland who had something interesting to say was there. All the way to Wojciech Karolak and Jan Jarczyk later when he returned. Too many to count and each had their own character, but we listened to each other and learned from each other. Well, a very nice melange there.
Ładnie się to mieszało wszystko razem po prostu.
Like Komeda's work, this stood in sharp contrast to the adherence to jazz standards by the Polish Jazz Quartet in the early 60s. The orchestra continued through the 70s, developing a previously unknown eclectic style. Indeed, it was a truly unique phenomenon.
There was a point when the Jazz Studio Orchestra was more than a big band. We had, at times, six saxophones, double rhythm sections, two drum sets, two basses, and whenever something fresh appeared on the horizon, we had to have it.
A year after creating the orchestra, Ptaszyn embraced yet another new role. It echoed Willis Conover, the godfather of Polish jazz, the man who had inspired the first generations of Polish jazzmen. Ptaszyn started hosting his own radio show titled 45 Minutes of Jazz. And like Conover's broadcasts in the 50s and 60s, it became a source of knowledge and inspiration for successive generations.
We each had a subject or slant. So Andrzej Dąbrowski had singers, Jan Borkowski had news, and I had so-called problems. In practice, the widest arena to cover. But this changed over time, especially when my teammates began dropping off.
The show is still on air, and alongside Conover's, which ran for over 40 years until 1996, Ptaszyn's became one of the longest-running jazz shows in the world with the same host. Over the decades, Ptaszyn followed and commented on developments in Polish and foreign jazz. Wrapped up in this history, politics continued to loom over the sheer interest in jazz.
Istniała cenzura.
We had censorship, and so we had to record each program at least a week before broadcast to give the censors time to make sure everything was above board. Then censorship went away, and initially not much changed, but the general trend, which affected the three-quarters program, was to move to live broadcasts.
But before censorship collapsed in 1989, it was severely tightened up throughout the ages. Because of growing anti-regime strikes, the authorities introduced martial law in Poland. It drastically restricted everyday life. There was a curfew, and tanks appeared on the streets. Concerts were cancelled, or the artists would refuse to perform as a protest against the regime. Looking for a way to make a living, musicians boarded international cruise ships. After the golden age of the last two decades, there's a drought for Polish recording and concert life.
Cruise ship gigs were the direct result of martial law and the cultural drought that followed in its wake. The Polish jazz community was blockaded. Nobody travelled. If you travelled, it meant the regime let you out and you were seen as one of their collaborators. Culture lay in ruin. There was nothing to do. Life was hard, politically and economically. There was a boycott of state events in the community. There was nothing else for it, so I decided to take a cruise ship gig to help out financially. At the time, it was a very lucrative job, getting paid in dollars. And I got to see a bit of the world. It wasn't something I had thought about initially, but with hindsight, it was the greatest silver lining of this experience. Over the course of 2 years, I think I went on three or four-month cruises.
Fortunately for Poland, martial law marked the beginning of the end for the communist regime. 6 years after it ended, a bloodless revolution ended Soviet dependency. It brought in democracy, open borders, and the free market. The American jazz that had been the origin, the music that had influenced Polish jazz, had soon become its main competition.
In the early 90s, it was very difficult to get your music released. Despite the arrival of the compact disc, Poland was suddenly flooded by a whole world, an entire history of jazz recordings. Nobody cared much about Polish jazz. If I had a choice to buy Namisławski, whom I'd heard 50 times, or Miles Davis's best record, which I'd never had, well, it wasn't a hard choice. It was a rocky ride, the 90s. It only started to settle afterwards, mainly through concerts. People recognized the unique aura of a jazz gig. But even here, we got flooded with visiting American stars.
But what remains unchanged through all these years is Ptaszyn Wróblewski's 45 Minutes of Jazz, still broadcast on Polish radio every Monday at 9 p.m. And Ptaszyn records new albums to this day.
No i te najnowsze dzieło, czyli box.
Most recently you issued a box set of archival recordings.
To już nie jest najnowsze dzieło. Najnowsze dzieło.
That's no longer the most recent. My latest is surprisingly a very good effort, if I say so myself. An album released by GAD Records, a continuation of Flying Lady, in a quartet with Marek Bliżyński.
Ja tego nie znam jeszcze.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that. Is it out yet?
Jeśli mam, to od razu wręczę, bo ja uważam...
If I have one on me, I'll give it to you straight away. I think it's one of my best.
This episode of Rebel Spirits was hosted by me, Paweł Brodowski. The show is brought to you by Culture.pl, the flagship brand of the Adam Mickiewicz Institute. We would like to thank Jan Ptaszyn-Wróblewski for finding time to talk to us and sharing his story. If you'd like to listen to more records from our today's protagonist and the young generation of jazz players he admires, please see the show notes for this episode or go to culture.pl/rebelspirits. That's all for now. Keep swinging.